ashes come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times, somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Today's episode features a good old-fashioned conversation about birds, dogs, South Dakota bird hunting, and, of course, gear for the bird hunter. My featured guest is a longtime friend of mine and a partner of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever for a long time. He's making his inaugural On the Wing podcasting debut. I feel like I have to apologize. 250 podcasts in, and Clay Thompson finally gets an opportunity to talk into the microphone. That's right. Our guest is Clay Thompson, a pro dog trainer, pro staffer for Sport Dog, and a friend of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever for more than 20 years. Has been at, I think, almost every Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic, but we'll talk about all of Clay's background. So this episode is being sponsored by Sport Dog Brand. Clay, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I've been looking forward to this all week as we had talked about it, and, you know, here we are. You know, it's a beautiful day. Today we ought to be out running dogs, but
it is a beautiful day.
We'll have fun talking about them.
I'm certain that our listeners, they maybe know the name, right, Clay Thompson, but for sure they've probably seen you, whether that's at National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic, mm-hmm. or your photo has been in all sorts of Sport Dog Brand advertisements over the years in the journals.
Yeah, so we always joke that the model budget was always really low for any commercials. And then I also had the added benefit of being friends, but close proximity to Lee Chose.
Yeah.
And so Chose has done a lot of that. There have been some other ads that I've been in, and I'll get text from a buddy.
You were in a shotgun ad, too, for a while, weren't you? Am I thinking about, were you in a Mossberg ad?
So, no, that's, so Luke Chose, Lee's son, and I right. have been accused of being brothers.
Doppelgangers.
Same hairdo, same beard, dressed the same. There was a Mossy Oak ad.
Okay.
That actually my dog Skeeter and I got in that one together. So I always said, at least there's a good looking dog in the ads if I'm in there, you know. don't leave me to carry it all.
Well, okay, so let's back up and go to the beginning. Tell folks a little bit about who you are, where you're from. You know, like I said, some people maybe know your name, but tell us about Clay Thompson.
So born and raised in a house of a hunter. My dad, you know, hunting was something that was just culture. There were guns in the house. There were bird dogs around. That was always just something that was very prominent from an early age.
What kind of bird dogs did you have as a kid?
So my first dog that I had was a Brittany Spaniel, little liver and white. He was, oh God, was he hard. I look back on it and what a lost opportunity. He was so much dog. And through just circumstance at the time, we didn't get the training, the time on him that we should have had, but he threw some tremendous pups. And so looking back on it, I've had some good dogs that left their mark on me. That was one where the fire got started, but I never really got to take full advantage of what he had to bring. You know, my first bird season was, I was 6 years old.
Oh.
And I got to come along on the quail hunt, which was like this giant rite of passage. And no gun, no nothing. I had to prove that I could keep up and keep up without whining.
In what state is this?
This is Oklahoma, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, for some reason, I thought you were born and raised in South Dakota.
No, it'll be 18 years in May when I moved to South Dakota. I'll get to that story in a second. So grew up, September 1st was a religious holiday. You went dove hunting.
Mm-hmm.
You sat on a stool, you sat around a wheat field or, you know, next to a pond on a bucket. And like that, I remember my dad writing notes to get me out of school that were Clay's presence is required at an important family function, you know, and because we had like strict attendance policies, you couldn't just get out to go bird hunting. So dad would write, you know, on lawyer letterhead why I got out of school that day. And so, you know, got the hooks in early.
Uh-huh.
I still remember that first morning dove, that first Bob White. the countless dogs, you know, that my dad's buddies had, seeing an, you know, an English setter or a big running pointer go from Mach 2 cruising around the field to just a statue. And just that rush of going, like, you know, that anticipation of that flush, seeing those birds get up. And so it really is. It's in my blood. So much so, the how I got to South Dakota was I didn't draw a non-resident duck license 1 year.
So for folks that don't live close to South Dakota or don't know explain why that's such a challenge.
So the non-resident licenses for waterfowl in South Dakota are limited. I think it's like 3,500. With the 3 days, it may be like 5,000.
It's really challenging.
It's tough to get. And so I had drawn a couple of years. I'd fallen in love with the area. I credit Tom Dockin to getting me to the Day County, South Dakota area. And so I love this place. And then I'm like, oh, I don't draw a license. And so I asked the people that I had, you know, met and come to, you know, love up there. I'm like, well, do you guys have to draw? And they're like, no. And so that was in the fall of 2005. May of 2006, I was a resident. And I was a bachelor with a Labrador, and Skeeter did not mind the move to South Dakota because he was just like, you know, he cut his teeth on South Dakota ducks and pheasants.
And were you working for Sport Dog at the time, and you could work remotely?
Exactly. I was doing some field staff and some sales work for Sport Dog. They were sending me all over the country, and really the attitude was, why wouldn't we have our employee behind a dog as much as we can?
Right.
That's what our brand is. That's who our customers are. If we lose that being behind dogs, we're not going to do right by our customers. So they encouraged it. Well, and then, of course, then I became the resident guide when all the executives and directors would want to come up and hunt with me. I held hunting camp.
Yeah.
And so, the stories over the years of the days when, you know, you froze to death or punched through, as I did a couple years ago. That was a nice, you know, cold bath. Fortunately, it was just, you know, knee deep, but it was chilly. But you just look back, it truly is. And I don't want it to come across as cliche, but Bob, it's not what we do; it's who we are.
It's a lifestyle.
It's if you took hunting away, I wouldn't be the person that I am.
When you were growing up, what did you think you were going to have as a career? When you're going to school, did you have a
so I was supposed to, you know, follow dad, become an attorney, right? Every kid. And then I got to college, University of Oklahoma. I was not as studious as I should have been. I still remember the first morning a buddy took me to the duck blind instead of us going to class, and it was life-changing. So there are those moments when you talk about there was before this moment, and then there's after. There are those watershed moments in our lives where I am different today because of this event. And that first duck hunt, Kevin dropped just this gorgeous, gorgeous Drake Widgeon, and his black lab lady sat there steady till he sent her. She came back with that duck, and I was done. I was just like, and in fact, I asked him, I said, can we do this again tomorrow? And so that kind of, you know, I did not help my GPA, but so really had no clue, you know, what I'm going to do from there. And so still in school and trying to kind of figure out, you know, where I wanted to go, Lance Tracy. And was like, we had met years before, like I was 18. We met in a hunting camp in West Texas, bow hunting for whitetails. Jump forward 10 years. Lance and I are in Mexico on a dove hunt, and I asked him, hey, what are you doing these days? He's like, well, this company, they've got this new brand, Sport Dog. What are you doing these days? And 2 weeks later, he and I were in the Kansas City Cabela's parking lot, and I started doing events for the brand, just standing in retail stores when they'd have a special weekend. And then that turned into game fair over in Anoka, Minnesota, at first Pheasant Fest.
Right.
You know, so all these things, and just kind of grew up with the brand and just kind of got it all over me. And, you know, like I said, it's been a, you know, a really, really fun time. Mm. And from it, the people I've met,
yeah.
You know, you get guys like, you know, a Tom Dokken, who then all the people, you know, to whom he turned me on,
right.
No lesser than, my wife, who I would not have met had I not made
no
the move
kidding.
To South Dakota.
Huh.
We ran in the same circles, and, you know, it just worked out that she was a Britain, South Dakota farm girl and really hadn't been around the hunting lifestyle. We start dating, and I changed that to where it was like, you know, getting her out there now. I still remember the first duck she shot when she knew I hadn't shot.
Hmm.
And so she looked at me like, I'm the only one that shot. That was my duck. I'm like, dear, that is 100% your duck. And then later that fall when she got her first rooster, and I remember the words when she said, I feel like I'm a better South Dakotan now because I finally got my first South Dakota rooster.
She grew up in Britain, which is, for folks that don't know, that's right near Aberdeen. It's in heart of pheasant country.
Oh, it's the place to be.
Yeah. And she didn't grow up bird hunting.
No, never did. Hmm. She's now, she does not get out when the mercury drops below about 20 degrees. She's kind of content to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
But early season or upland when we can get her walking and keep her warm, she is a trooper. She's in much better shape than I am, so she walks me into the ground on those days.
Mm-hmm.
But she loves it. And then there's the dog
yeah.
that who is curled up. I'll get pictures when I'm on the road, and he'll be on my pillow. And she loves having him there, but she recognizes this dog was bred to be out there chasing right. birds, making that retrieve, you know, making that flush, doing these things. And so the dog helped. I could have gotten her into the field, but it wouldn't have been the same level of commitment had the dog not been involved.
Yeah. And what kind of dog do you have these days?
So our hunting dog, we have three.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Our hunting dog is Labrador.
Okay.
LS. And we do have a Golden who is very much couch potato.
Golden Retriever?
Yes.
That doesn't hunt?
She doesn't.
Oh, okay.
We've tried. Her retrieve desire really isn't there.
Okay.
We like to say that Bobby has two hearts and no brain because she's very sweet, but she's...
Thanks for naming her Bobby.
Yeah, sorry. Well, so it's Bobby Joe for you guys. It's not a dig on St. Pierre here.
All heart, no brain. And you said your lab's name was LS?
Yes.
What does that mean?
We have FCC rules applied
no.
here.
Oh, now you've teased me. Yeah. No, go for it.
So being around the dog trainers and being around the guys who they complain about, I've trained 95 dogs that had this name. I've trained 102 uh-huh. dogs that
oh,
had
yeah.
this name.
Yeah.
Always try to come up with something
right.
a little different.
There's a million Remy's, Benelli's, Dakota's, Coda's.
Yes.
Yes.
They're out there. So one night, I might have had like a second beer. It might have had an influence on the decision. I turned to my wife and I said, we should just name him Little Shit. I said, because for the next however many weeks, months.
Come on. You named your dog Little Shit.
Because I told her, I said, for the next however many weeks, we're going to, you know, come here, you little shit. Knock it off, you little shit. And the next morning, it was still a good idea. So LS, I really.
And you have papers to back this?
Well, so his registered name is the Times They Are A-Changin', the Bob Dylan song.
Okay, yep.
So I was going from the very hardcore bachelor
mm-hmm.
to dating my now wife, Julie, having our three daughters and, you know, in the life and all this. And I was realizing that as cool as that bachelor life had been, I found something better.
Yeah.
Like, I found the love of this beautiful woman, and she tolerated me for God knows why. And so the dog was like this transitionary piece of, it wasn't just Clay and Skeeter, the bachelor crew.
Uh-huh.
I was moving into, you know, getting a little bit domesticated. And so so his registered name is The Times They Are A-Changin', but...
you know, just to point this out to you, like, Little Shit sounds more to me like a bachelor naming a dog. I'm just saying, Clay.
It's fair. It's fair. But so LS, now the world knows.
Yes.
There's no more wink and a nod.
We will be fine with FCC. So you got
okay.
You got Little Shit. You got Bobby.
Bobby
all
Joe.
Heart, no brains.
Uh-huh. And then Noel, she's a mini Australian Shepherd.
Okay.
Who thinks that she's, you know, 12 feet tall and bulletproof. Yeah, she she wears a bark collar often.
Okay.
It's necessary. So yeah, so that's our crew.
Yeah, that's fun.
And the dogs are an integral part of the life.
Yeah.
They're I can't imagine whether it's just getting up in the morning and not having those dogs looking at you for that first cup of food, having the buddy, you know, curl up on the couch with you, and then of course, you know, taking them afield and really letting them shine, letting them be what they are.
Yeah.
Then it's so rewarding. I cannot imagine a dogless life.
So you grew up as a bobwhite hunter, and you said Brittany's.
Mm-hmm.
And then you moved to South Dakota, duck hunter, pheasant hunter. You know, do you still go back home to Oklahoma and chase quail?
I haven't in years.
Oh, okay.
There's still some trips that we make. Just got back a couple weeks ago from a gorgeous bobwhite trip down in South Georgia.
Mm.
And that was like the old school, you know, horseback, mule-drawn wagon.
Yeah.
But I don't chase the quail often enough. I really wish I had access to that. And like the mountain quail is the only one that's left on my checklist.
No kidding.
Yeah. Good friend out in the Monterey Bay area of California, got me out there on some valley birds, and have done some, you know, Mexico and West Texas, you know, getting the blues. And
yeah,
so yeah, that you know, the gambles and merns down in Arizona, I like. And thanks for, you know, pheasant forever, quail forever, there are still wild places where we can go get wild birds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just part of it. And so for me, finding that spot somewhere new, you know, get different colored mud on the boots. I love traveling, but just don't get back to Oklahoma often enough.
Okay.
I'll be back down there. I've done some waterfowling, some turkey hunting back in Oklahoma. But so it was in being a hardcore quail hunter, but in the early 90s, coccidiosis, I think I'm saying it right, was like this horrible disease that came in and hammered the quail population. And so at the same time, none of us wanted to stop hunting.
Right.
You had a big upswing in the waterfowl population. And so a lot of us traded, you know, brush pants for waders.
Pointers for retrievers.
Pointers for retrievers. And that's really where the, you know, the duck hunting bug. And I told you a story about my buddy in college taking me, seeing a lady make that retrieve. Those things, you know, it just switched me. But then when I found South Dakota and literally had an afternoon where we were set up in a field, we were watching some mallards that were out on a body of water. They were keeping the last hole open on the lake, but they hadn't come out to start feeding yet. So we're sitting there under the decoys in the blinds, and I keep hearing these roosters cackle. And it was like, okay, they're not feeding. Finally, all right, you know, Skeeter, come on. And we went to the CRP that was adjacent to the field we were hunting.
Mm-hmm.
We got our three roosters, came back, and got in the blind before the feeding start, got our five mallards. So walked out of there with something. I guess there are other places you can do it outside the Dakotas,
sure.
but I think it's rare that in the same half section got a limit of roosters and a limit of greenheads in an afternoon hunt. And so that's just really, you know.
It is, you know, get asked a question a lot. I'm sure you do as well. Like, you know, what's your favorite dog, breed of dog? What's your, you know, what do you think is the best breed for this species?
Yes.
Right? You get asked that all the time at Sport Dog, I'm assuming.
I do.
And, you know, it does come down to individual preferences. And a lot of, you know, people in your situation who fall in love with duck hunting, it's duck hunting first and then something else, right? Pheasant hunting, quail hunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, you want a dog that can do A and B. It's not necessarily what's the dog that is going to just do the best for whatever. It's what's the most adaptable. And although it'd be hard to argue if you're a pheasant hunter in the upper Great Plains, so North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, it'd be hard to say anything's better than a Labrador retriever for a pheasant hunt in cattails, heavy cover. But if you're also a duck hunter, it's really hard
it's
to
really
argue.
Hard. You know, right? So I would love, you know, if we had the opportunity. So the Bobby Joe and Noelle are our daughter's dogs. I think that as we get the opportunity to, you know, the girls take their dogs with them, they move away. I would like to see, I could really see a pointing breed in the house. Mm. Because we're not that far away from some tremendous sharp tail hunting, which you can do with a Labrador. Had tremendous success with it. But that Oklahoma, and Grover, Oklahoma, when you said we're going bird hunting, that meant Bob White's. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's why I find myself, we're either going pheasant hunting or we're going bird hunting. And to me, it's just because of all the years that it was. But so as that Oklahoma bird hunter, there's something about a dog that stands still.
Yeah.
And just, we're down there in Georgia, and those pointers just all of a sudden you just lock, and that paw comes up, that tail goes straight like a piece of rebar, and it's like, okay. I love my labs. Mm-hmm. But there's something about the pointing breeds that just do it. And so you're going, okay, so why not a GSP? Why not a wire hair? You know, and again, it just comes back to personal preference.
Sure.
I've hunted over some tremendous GSPs and wire hairs.
If you're duck hunting and then, you know, pounding heavy cover mm-hmm. for pheasants, obviously I'm a short hair lover.
Yep.
But I wouldn't argue at all about, Labrador being the top pick. You start talking sharp tails or getting down, you know, Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma for quail, and you want to cover more ground and have your
100%.
Dog, then, yeah, I'm going to start saying setters, you know, vishlas, like English pointers.
You bet you are.
You know, so it's just a matter of personal preference and then what you're going to chase. And, you know, you throw rough grouse into the mix, and it just, to me, adds another layer of, I really want a pointer.
I know. And I'm ashamed to say it. 18 years South Dakota, you know, bordering Minnesota, I have never even hunted rough grouse.
Come on!
And it's I admitted the shame.
Wow, when I first had we it. Have to change that.
But yes, let's do it.
All right.
And even as another conservation organization at Sport Dog is
Rough Grouse Society.
Rough Grouse Society.
Yeah.
Got invited on that hunt so many times and just never worked.
Oh man!
So
you got to change it. Yeah, that'll be a different. Growing up in Oklahoma and South Dakota, or living in South Dakota where it's open, and all of a sudden we put you into the claustrophobic grouse woods. That'll be entertaining.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about the Field Sentinel, the new product at Sport Dog. But first, like, you live in South Dakota. You hunt South Dakota. What was hunting season like last season? Because, there was a lot of trepidation last winter. Very, very hard winter. Take us through how it turned out for you.
So, personally, I didn't bag that many upland birds. Mm. Where we are, Mother Nature was so schizophrenic this year that we had early freeze up. Then it opened up, and then it got cold again, but not quite cold enough. There was a lot of my spots to which I have access that you couldn't risk the edge cattail sloughs.
Okay, and we're talking about like northeastern South Dakota.
Yes. Yeah. Give me...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Britain, but, yeah. Aberdeen.
But 45 minutes north, I'm in North Dakota. Mm. Maybe an hour east, I'm in Minnesota. So, we're right up in the northeast corner, in the Webster area.
Yep.
And so there were days that I should have gotten out that I didn't, but there were so many of the times when you couldn't trust the ice and haven't had a dog punch through that I went in after. I'm more leery about it. But there were a lot of birds. And the best news is that we're still seeing a ton of birds, and this has been the mildest winter that I ever remember in South Dakota. It kind of broke our neck Monday to Tuesday. We went from 65 and sunny to zero the next night.
Right.
But I think that we need some rain. We need some moisture this spring, but the conditions should be good, and we should carry over a tremendous crop of birds that I'm really thinking this next fall, unless we just have a washout nesting season, we lose it. It ought to be a tremendous brood crop, and next fall should be even better.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. This has been a very low stressful winter on the birds. So now it's just a matter of, the hens are healthy. Now what kind of weather can we have for spring nesting season?
Need a little help there.
Yeah. So you've lived in South Dakota 18 years?
Yeah, coming up in May, it will be.
Your impression over the last 18 years, that landscape where you live has changed pretty dramatically, hasn't it?
It is so, so radical. So what was it back what was the year we first hit the $6 corn? Was that 08?
Yeah, so 06, 07 was the peak of the Conservation Reserve Program, so almost 36 million acres. And South Dakota set a 60-year high in harvest, bird harvest, in I think it was 06. And then you're right, there was the kind of the influx of the ethanol subsidy, mm-hmm. and corn went through the roof.
Corn went through the roof. I absolutely hold no ill will, no animosity whatsoever to the he's a friend, but the guy who broke up the piece of ground that was my go-to spot. I mean, it's tough because that place, they left the cattails. I'll give them credit that, you know, they weren't the guys going and burned up, you know, all of it. He recognized that it was going to be too wet in the spring to plant it anyway. But it was my, like, my life's on the line. You've got to go put a bird in the pouch. Where do you go? To see that spot get tilled up, I mean, it hurt. But by the same token, guy's feeding his family.
Yeah.
And when grain prices plummeted, nobody rushed in to, you know, like, prop him up. So I was like, I grew up in Oklahoma with the oil field boom and bust. It's an ag boom bust cycle, it seems like, you know, in South Dakota. So don't blame the guys at all. But I think that there some short-term decisions have long-term impacts. And so that's, again, why I just cherish this organization, that what we're doing, I think what PFQF does better than any of the other conservation organizations that all do amazing things, I think there's a better cohabitation with the farmer. I think QFPF works. They found ways to get along with the farmer better than some of the organizations have. And there's, you know, there's going to be controversy because there's only so much land.
Right.
And that's why we all covet it. We all can, because they're not, as they say, they're not making any more. But I do like the way this organization finds a way that, I like to say, it tastes good to everybody.
Yeah.
Nobody has to lose.
Yeah. Great example of that, you know, as we talk about South Dakota, the newest one for us is called PATH, Public Access to Habitat, which pays farmers, landowners, an additional $25 an acre to open up good quality habitat for access. So it's layering another payment on top of what is likely a CRP payment, and it might even be another payment from the state. So to your point, you know, the key word is voluntary. Like, we got to make,
for sure,
got to make the juice worth the squeeze for the landowner to keep it in habitat or create access out of it. So thank you for the kind words for the organization.
Yeah. A good friend, I was talking about the people I've met through Tom Dockin. Bruce Nolan is absolutely top of that list. He's great, great dog man, has owned kennels back in the day and all that. To me, he does the best job I've ever seen of, he gets the local farmers and then he gets their kids out hunting with him because he knows that if he's got that kid wanting to go hunting and the kid saying, hey, Dad, we want to go, Dad might decide that that marginal piece, let's put that in the CRP. Instead of putting it under the, you know, the disc again,
right, right.
And I think it's just, he's one that leads by example. He's one that's, you know, done that with his own ground, has put his money where his mouth is. So I give Bruce credit for that, kind of being an inspiration for the voluntary piece. But so how do we incentivize these people? And it's not always with an extra payment. Sometimes it's with getting them into the hunting lifestyle and showing them, you know, you own these tremendous, wonderful acres. To recreational value too. It's not just, you know, your office.
Right.
And so I think that that's one of the things that's really cool, that there's, the farmers are stewards of the land and showing them that they can take care of it from a business standpoint and from a health standpoint, but then they can go have a lot of fun out there on it too.
So, you know, the landscape's changed a little bit in that 18 years. What about the hunting pressure? Do you, from when you first moved to South Dakota to now, what do you think?
So it depends on the year. The word gets out that numbers are down. You can see the pressure come back off. But I will say that, and as a public land hunter, you know, you kind of keep your spots quiet. And you know, they're limited. This last year, there were hunters out, but it was never such that I couldn't go to that spot because there were already two pickups there. Or you get somewhere and you see a guy pulling away. I'd say the pressure has lightened, but it's, you know, there's certainly opportunities to come out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are spots you get farther off the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Get to that spot where you got to walk a half mile before the cover gets good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just put a little more, you know, boots on the ground and, okay, there's still birds out there.
There's more benefits to being a local than just the waterfall permits, right?
There are. There really are.
Know the secret spots. All right, so I mentioned I wanted to talk about the Sport Dog Field Sentinel. So here's what the Sport Dog website says. High drive dogs will prioritize the pursuit of birds over their own health. We've all seen that happen, right?
Oh, yes.
It's our job as the human beings with bigger brains, in some cases, to get those pups, our pups, home safe. Enter bodyguard health alerts from Sport Dog by monitoring heart rate and the intensity or duration of exertion. The Sport Dog Field Sentinel will send you an alert if your dog's exhaustion level reaches a concerning point. All right. There's got to be a story behind the creation of this concept. And Clay, I know that it's got to involve you, right?
So I was fortunate enough to be a part of this.
Okay.
A few years back, we went to Northeastern Arkansas, and we sent some people that were not hunters, that were not outdoors people, and we sent them there to observe hunters and dog people.
Okay.
So they call it an ethnographic study. It's the big word that's saying, if I watch you do something, I'm going to learn things that you won't tell me you've done. Not that you're trying to keep it from me.
Right. But just intuitive for you.
It's intuitive. There's stuff that you've done for 30 years that you don't realize you do anymore.
And you probably can't even explain it.
Exactly right. So we send these people to Arkansas to watch some waterfowling. We sent a group, and then this is where I got to join in, to central Iowa and saw some upland hunting. And we asked people, like, okay, so what do you need from a new training collar from Sport Dog?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what features would you like? And it was flattering, but it was frustrating. We heard a lot of, your shot collars are really good. I wish I had something that, the expression that kept coming up over and over is, told me if my dog's about to fall out. And I think we've all seen that dog with low blood sugar or overexerted heat.
Or that, just being hunting on a really warm day and you're like, gosh, I'm nervous.
100%.
Yeah.
So we've seen those, and the guys were like, I wish I had something that would kind of give me a heads up before we got to the point to where something bad had happened with the dog. So I think, like, the worst case scenario of that is going back to 2003 in South Dakota. When in that Mitchell kind of Kimball area, I think it was documented 100 dogs that were lost that opening weekend. It was, we had birds, we had heat, crazy heat, and we had no water. And so these high drive dogs that we talk about, they're not going to call it quits. And let's face it, we don't always show the best judgment, especially we're in birds.
Right. You've traveled to South Dakota opening day.
Yes.
You probably spent thousands of dollars to get there, trained your dog all summer long, and here you are, and there's birds everywhere, and it's 90 degrees.
And guys hunted to, like, well, let's hunt over that hill, and we'll get to that slough, and then we'll water the dogs. They got there, and there were dry sloughs. So I personally put Skeeter in a bad spot one day. Similar scenario, driving back from the grocery store, and a covey of sharp tails flushed, and I watched them light out there in the field. Went home, grabbed the dog and a gun, went back out there, and hadn't grabbed a water bottle. It was warm that day. Hunted back to that slough that turned out to be dry, and spent the next 45 minutes. I found a tractor tire that they'd use as a feed bunk, and there was some rainwater collected, and I was putting that rainwater on his head, putting it on his belly, and after about 45 minutes, he no longer had that Gene Simmons tongue, you know, that long, panting, still panting, but not so hard that we couldn't, you know, walk at heel back to the truck, but Bob scared the hell out of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because here's my best buddy, and I realized it was all on me, because I hadn't shown the good sense to slow down or to not be there or to to grab that bottle of water, like
right.
all the
it
things.
Was, everything was impromptu, and you made some mistakes along the way.
Absolutely. So knowing that those situations occurred, having lived through it, fortunately, no harm came to Skeeter. He was fine. Hearing these hunters tell us, I wish I had a product that did this, we put the engineers down the path of go do this something that's never been done before.
Hmm.
And a lot like smartwatch that so many of us wear, where it gives us some, takes some readings, our body tells us some things.
I had a 78 sleep score last night, which was pretty good for me.
Okay, so 78 is pretty. I'm on my second month of a CPAP.
Okay.
So, yeah, I get it. But, you know, wouldn't have known if we hadn't had some of these devices telling us, like, hey, dude, you're not sleeping very well.
Right on.
So, told the engineers, invent this stuff. And they're like, well, you can't do this for this reason. And these people have tried all this stuff. And we can measure a dog's heart rate, but only below 1.5 miles an hour of movement. And it was kind of like the whole, like, so you're not landing somebody on the moon was Daryl Douglas's line. Like, we're not landing somebody on the moon. And then engineers would just roll their eyes and shake their heads. And it seemed like then they'd come back and go, okay, we can do this. You're close. But and so over a lot of development time, some really, really smart, skilled guys came up with this Field Sentinel system that it does just as you read. So we're reading heart rate, and we're measuring that. But then also the dog's movement, which is I'm learning there's a difference in motion and movement, and then measuring that all over time. Feeds it into the algorithm that some more big brain guys came up with, and that's what we're calling the bodyguard, and it generates a health score. So it's taking these readings, and it's not a run your dog hard, throw it on them, and like, you know, a snapshot of how they're doing. It's something you need to put on before the hunt.
Okay.
The dog needs to be still for a couple of minutes, and it'll actually indicate to you when it's getting a reliable reading off the dog. And then at that point, you're good to go and hunt.
Hmm.
And this is not a replacement for your brain and for your observation and your good judgment, but it really is. It's a maybe that dog's out of sight, or maybe because they're so high drive, we don't see that they're starting to slow or that fatigue is setting in. They are becoming exerted. That the collar is going to take that health reading, and when it gets above the threshold that you've set, because you can change it, be it you've got that two-year-old who's a machine and he's in Olympic caliber shape versus the old dog, so you can kind of adjust where that health score kicks in. But once it does, we've dubbed it, it's the check engine light for your dog.
Sure.
So no different than driving home today, check engine light comes on my pickup. I don't know exactly what's wrong, but I know we need to stop and investigate it. So that's when you get this alert on the Field Sentinel, put eyes on your dog, then, you know, start doing your assessment. It's not a medical device. This is not a replacement for vets or diagnostic, you know, tests that they would run.
Gotcha.
But it's just a little bit of that kind of guardian angel on your shoulder, giving you some information that you might not have had yet so that you can make adjustments for your dog or catch them before we get in a bad spot.
And so it's built, so the foundation of it is an e-collar, right? So it still functions as, so you don't have to buy an add-on. You buy a Field Sentinel as your new e-collar, correct?
Correct. You still have shock, tone, vibration, one or two dog capabilities. You can add a dog to it. All of those things. It's still a great, great training collar that, you know, for what Sport Dog has been known for, you know, 20 years.
Right.
We've just added some capabilities that I think are pretty exciting.
So if it's time to buy a new e-collar, you upgrade to this version. It's not an add-on. You look for the Field Sentinel. It's going to function
exactly
the same way you're used to, but you do have this check engine light. And that's on – is it on the transmitter or where the handheld?
It's on the handheld.
Okay.
So you've been out to eat, and they tell you it's going to be a 15-minute wait, and you get that little puck.
Yep.
Well, when your table's ready, you know that thing just – it raises all kinds of cane.
Like
it vibrates, it flashes, it makes noise. That's what the handheld does.
Okay.
It's very – it's not at all subtle, and it's on purpose because when we need to know what's going on with that dog. The other thing that does – so the antenna, there's a little LED ring around the antenna. If it flashes red, it's dog one. If it flashes green, it's dog two.
Okay.
So it kind of helps you to differentiate which dog it is I need to get eyes on right now.
Gotcha. And then you get your eyes on them and you do your field check. It really is a check engine light. It's like,
it is.
Hey, there's a problem with Bobby.
Right.
Or LS, little shit. That probably, the light's going off all the time.
Around
that
him.
One, right? And you bring the dog to you and check the gums, check the tongue.
Do all the things. Like, you know, grab that scruff of the neck behind the shoulders. You know, pull that up. If it immediately falls down, we're good on hydration. If that skin stays up, okay, we're dehydrated. Again, it's not diagnosing anything in and of itself. It's telling you, put eyes on it. Give that assessment that we've all done to our bird dogs for our whole career. Just, you know, check into them.
Look. Right.
And I'm excited about it because I think it will it'll help some guys in some situations before they get themselves past the point of, you know, of harm. But again, use common sense. Like, if it's 75 degrees, no, we don't go find the thickest cattail slough and run our dog hard in it. So common sense has to prevail. This is just a little extra help that I think, you know, all hunters can benefit from it.
It feels like a tremendous collar for a first-time dog owner. And from the perspective of, you know, somebody that hasn't hunted their dog in all variety of temperatures, and this is, again, check engine light. It's just a indicator of, ooh, I'm getting a little warm, you know.
100%.
Because, you know, I think back when, you know, when you have a dog as a kid is completely different when you have a dog as an adult and it's your dog and you have to think for the dog versus a kid, right?
Right.
So that's why I think this is such a tremendous tool for the first-time dog owner. Maybe it's not that sport dogs marketed it that way at all. It's just my intuition.
No, but I hear what you're saying. That because they don't have those experiences of here's when we went a little hard and shouldn't have. Thanks for them. But also, as we slow down and we're not keeping up with the dog as well as we did when we were, you know, 25, having this that's watching the dog for us because we're not staying as close to the dog, keeping our eyes on him as constantly, or those big running dogs that we really let cover some ground, I think it being that little guardian angel when we're not there is helpful.
Yeah.
But with that said, I didn't have the collar throwing an alert on me this fall. And we bird hunted.
Not once.
Because.
Which is great, right?
Yeah. I mean, LS is five. He's in good shape. I do a much better job keeping his weight proper than I do my own. You know, it's because he can't open the treat jar for
testify,
himself.
Brother.
Like I can. But so I didn't have an alert, but I never put him in a situation where I expected it. But likewise, if you find yourself, you're running it and you're getting an alert that you think is premature and going like, okay, there's nothing wrong with him, you can move the alert level up.
Yeah, so you're taking me right where I was interested in going. So you said you programmed that out of the box, like where you think that it probably tells you
it's
like
going to come out on level one. Okay. And so it's going to come off the most sensitive and go off the quickest. And the reason we did that, Bob, is I don't want somebody thinking, well, I've got a young badass, let's set him up on a level four, and because I don't care levels one, two, or three alert. Great example, one of our engineers, he has I think that dog was six, late season, very in shape, English setter. I mean, this dog, he knows his business. About 20 minutes into a hunt, it alerted. And he was like, there's no way. We've been here for 20 minutes. The conditions are cool. There's no way this dog's having a problem. Dog had a severe laceration on his tongue and was losing a lot of blood.
Holy mackerel.
And so the body's normal reaction to that is like, okay, we got to keep blood pressure up. Let's pump harder. The collar recognized that increased heart rate and that sustained increased heart rate, and it went, hey, this dog needs your attention. I'm not saying that he wouldn't have gotten eyes on the dog and the dog went fine with the older systems, but it was a situation where he thought, okay, probably should have gotten an alert here, but he absolutely should have. And the collar, you know, made the situation better. So I, you know, it's not magic, but it's certainly, my dog's wearing one when we're out there up on hunting. I think it's a tremendous product that, you know, people look into it and make the decision. If the features provide what you think you need, then absolutely.
So heart rate, you know, like you mentioned, compared it to a smartwatch, mm-hmm. kind of we all sort of get how that works. And you just explained a good way that, you know, losing blood, pumping extra blood, and heart rate is monitored. Exertion level and activity duration. Can you explain how those are monitored a little bit more?
Yeah. So the reason that so the algorithm was tweaked over, I've lost count of all the different dogs and the different breeds that we tested, because we didn't want this to be a one dog system.
Right.
It alerts for LS, but I don't know how it's going to alert on these
right.
other dogs.
Labrador versus an English Cocker.
The reason we put the exertion level and the motion and all those things over time is that we had dogs right out of the dog box throwing an alert.
Hmm.
Because the dogs, it's like, put me in, coach.
Mm.
You grab the dog out of the box, they're losing their mind. Mm. They're so jacked up because it's their turn to go run. We were seeing spikes in heart rate that were throwing the alert.
Huh.
When the dog really, it wasn't like, okay, this dog's nowhere near any kind of a dangerous situation. So that's how we tweaked that algorithm to show, okay, this dog needs to have been moving. There needs to have been sustained movement and then a sustained heart rate in this range all over time. That's kind of the secret sauce.
Makes
that's
sense,
in there.
Yeah.
So that's why we're saying more of an exertion level. Ben, it's not doing a body temp calculation. I mean, I think that's kind of the holy grail.
Hmm.
Is if you could know core body temperature, but
yeah, you're right where my head was going, because that's intuitive, right? Like that's what
right.
you want to know.
So we've backed into it. The sensitivity is set to where I'm comfortable enough that, you know, I'm running it on my dog,
hmm.
and mm-hmm. and he is critically important to the family,
right?
So it's
even yeah. though he's little shit.
Absolutely, he still is. He's not so little anymore. If I guess I could have named him BS, but that was, you know, that'd have been a little too obvious.
So, you know, that Labrador BS. No, those are my initials too. He can be Labrador versus English Cocker, right? Like a big dog versus that's when you get the dog or the field sentinel out of a box. I'm assuming there's a kind of a setting based on the size of the dog.
No, so because it's more directional. Where I was saying earlier that this is not something that you run the dog hard and then call him over to you and throw the collar on him and have it take a reading.
Hmm.
Again, going back to the over time thing, it's directional. Okay, we've seen these biometrics increasing.
Okay.
And staying sustained. We're moving in a direction towards we might be getting exerted.
Gotcha.
Less than just a snapshot and saying, what are you right now? It's no different than your, you were talking about your sleep number.
Yep.
If you, all of a sudden the watch just every 30 minutes took a reading, it's not as good as if it's continually monitoring you and
gotcha.
Seeing like, okay, you got into deep sleep, you came out of it, oh, went back into deep sleep. This is seeing mm-hmm. heart rate has come up, it's stayed up. There's been a lot of motion. There's been a lot of, you know, exertion. Now it's time to say, okay,
right.
check out the dog.
It's really not breed dependent. It's just physical fitness dependent.
And, for sure.
Right. And so that's why the duration of the activity and the monitoring that is so important with the heart rate and everything together.
Exactly right.
Got it. Okay. It sounds like, you know, I have the Sport Dog Tech 2.0,
mm-hmm.
Which I use when I'm hunting. And then the Upland, what's the right number?
1875.
You got it. Uh-huh. when I use, like, just day-to-day training for the most part. You know, if I have a Sport Dog brand e-collar, how complicated is it to learn to use the Sentinel?
It's very simple. Mm-hmm. So all the e-collar functionality is going to be the buttons are in the same spot,
mm-hmm.
the toggle switch, the intensity dial, all of those things are placed. You would look at this if there were no logo on it and you'd recognize this is a Sport Dog e-collar.
Cool.
So all of that is going to be totally intuitive. You're going to run it just like your Upland Hunter 1875. Where the new stuff comes in is, okay, trusting that I'm getting an alert when I should have, or that I haven't gotten one yet, you know, kind of what's – that's where there's just more nuance. But, again, I don't expect – like, you buy one, you take it out and run your dog. This is not something that you should be looking for that alert every time you're out. No different than how often does a check engine light come on in your pickup? It's not that often, but when it does, I want to know. So I think that's really we get hung up on the bodyguard and focus on that, but it really is. It's just a really amazing e-collar, very effective, with half-mile and one-mile range, so you know tons of range, that also has this extra, like I said, just that, that check engine light sitting there just in case.
Thank you for doing this, by the way, with me.
Appreciate oh, dude, this is fun.
So as we round third and head to close, I'm thinking about, you know, that holy grail a little bit. And not to give trade secrets away, but as you look in the crystal ball, you've been, you know, working bird dogs your whole life and in e-collars. What is on the horizon for the bird dog, you know, the bird hunter looking for? Because I think about fishing, and you know the hot topic now in fishing is forward facing sonar.
Right.
Absolutely has changed how tournaments are handled, and it's almost become like an ethical debate. And I'm you know, I think back to 20 years ago, you know, the what e-collars have done for just peace of mind for the bird hunter.
Oh my gosh, yes.
You know, to be able to control a dog running towards a highway or out in the grouse woods, and you know, when they leave bell range, and you don't, you know, and the GPS and sport dog number tech one was the first on the scene with a GPS.
It came from Lance losing his dog Ripley.
Is that right?
And he was out, and somebody looked at him and go, well, if only there were a dog electronics company that could come up with something to help this situation. And,
you know,
Lance had to kind of sheepishly be like, he's right. And that's what spun us down that path.
And for me, you know, shotguns, you know, pick all, everything, but the GPS handheld in your, you know, on a hunt and knowing that I got to really screw up for the dog not to come home. Right, in terms
100%.
Of loss, has been the greatest invention for my lifetime as a bird hunter. So if it's the longest winded question of all time, what do you see on the horizon?
You know, so I think we're going to continue to see refinements. Like the field sentinel is going to get better. The GPS technology is going to get better. Things are going to get smaller. So when you're talking about the forward facing sonar, I thought you were going where. We've had people that want cameras on the e-collar. So when the dog goes on point, they can see what's there.
What direction the birds are going to flush from.
Exactly. And so, you know, so I think that's really where it's going to come from some hunter, some dog owner who says, I wish there were, and then fill in a blank. That's where each one of these things we've talked about, be it the GPS, how Sport Dog got into that, the refinements of the e-collar, this field sentinel, it's always been because there's somebody with a dog in a need. I wish I had blank. And so I think, like, I don't know what the next big leap is going to be, but I think that that's where it's going to originate is, is from a dog owner saying, you know, I want that.
Well, when it comes, you can look for it at sportdog.com, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for doing this.
Bob, thanks. It's been great.
Yeah, outstanding. All right, folks, check it out, sportdog.com, the Field Sentinel. And I'm Bob St. Pierre reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks, folks.